Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to La Liga Lowdown. It's our match day 36 recap. It's very near the end of the season, and things have happened this week. I'm your host, Matt Clark. I'm joined by Sam Leveridge today. How are you, Sam?
Good, thank you. All evening with the noise of the Bernabeu and the announcements of the goals every 5 or 6 minutes disrupting things, but yeah, good.
Yes, there were plenty of them, weren't there? Real Madrid winning 6-0 against Levante, which of course means Levante are the first club to be relegated from La Liga this season. Our commiserations to all of the Levante fans out there. It's been inevitable for what seems like all season. They've been struggling, but they did show signs of life under Alessio Lisci. Obviously a terrible way to go, losing 6-0 at the home of the champions. But what's your kind of sum up of Levante's season?
Yeah, no, I mean, this was kind of the performance that we were seeing from them early on in the season. And they did come back to life under Lisci, and I think they kind of showed that they did have the talent. They did have, especially in attack, they had the talent. But at the end of the day, the defensive weaknesses were always too evident. It was always going to cost them. And unfortunately for them, their comeback was too little too late. And maybe if the season had another 10 games to go, it'd be a different story. But yeah, too little too late and just too weak at the back, I think.
Yeah, defensively, very much an issue for them this season. That's 73 goals conceded in 36 matches. Pretty damning reading. As you say there, yeah, very disappointing for them. They will try their best to come back. Will they be able to keep the likes of José Luis Morales?
Well, that's a big question, isn't it? I mean, a guy of his age and so on, I imagine that he will probably still be around at Levante next season. But they've got plenty of other good players. José Luis Campaña, for example. I mean, imagine he'll be moving on. Even kind of the Enes Bardis and so on, who maybe haven't been in their best this season, but are players who on their day are definitely top flight quality. And I can't imagine that they're going to be hanging around in Segunda. So I think Levante could have a big rebuilding project on their hands this summer. And there's some big changes off the field as well. We've heard from Paco in the past about Kiko Catalan and his role and what could happen there with a referendum from the club's members and shareholders. So we'll see what else happens in the next few weeks at Levante. But I think there could be a big summer of change for them.
Yes, indeed. Mucho ánimo to all the Levante fans. As we said, we hope you'll be back soon because we've loved having you in La Liga for these 5 seasons. Always entertaining and always taking on the big sides and generally getting some great results against them too. We will not forget this chapter in the top flight. Okay, well, elsewhere in the relegation battle, Alaves maintained their fight for survival with a 2-1 home win over Espanyol. It was do or die for Alaves. If they'd lost this one, they were down 2, but they got the win. Miguel de la Fuente and Gonzalo Escalante with the goals for them. A much needed win. Espanyol, probably one of the better teams you would have hoped to face in a situation like this, given their away form and given their current issues, which we'll touch on in a moment. But firstly on Alaves, still tough for them because they are still, 4 points off the pace and only six points to play for. Well, they've done all they can this week, haven't they? That's all we can say, I suppose.
Yeah, and under Julio de Velazquez, they look pretty good at home. I mean, never spectacular, never convincing, but they've been grinding out results, and it's just away from home under him where they haven't been able to do that, and that could prove to be the difference between staying up or not. And José Luis Mendilibar, who, I mean, we were quite positive when he was appointed, but he just hasn't had the desired impact when he came in, and his spell was quite disastrous. So I think for Alaves now, it's just, I think their squad doesn't have enough quality. I mean, the core of their squad is maybe strong enough. I mean, you know, Fernando Pacheco, Joselu, even Florian Lejeune and players like that, and Victor Laguardia, but I mean, there's just not enough depth and too many players past their best and no strength in the team to back it up. So, I mean, that's another team that I think are going to have a big job on their hands to have another kind of crack at coming back up to Primera if they do go down.
Yeah, you're sort of writing them off there, and I'm pretty sure they will go, but their final two fixtures then, away at Levante, who of course have just gone down, and then home to Cadiz, which could be an absolute all-or-nothing match on the final day. So wouldn't that be a partidazo in prospect? But yeah, I think they have left it a little bit too little too late. But as things stand, they are still alive. One place up from them is Mallorca. And after their 6-2 hammering at the weekend against Granada, they faced a trip to the Sanchez Pizjuan and came away with a clean sheet. Did it surprise you, Sam? And what do you think of Mallorca's prospects?
No, weirdly, it didn't surprise me. I mean, Javier Aguirre is very like that. I mean, we saw similar when he was at Leganés a few years ago, that he is capable of getting a team to set up very defensively and grind out clean sheets and so on. I think against Granada at home, that was never going to be the approach. I mean, that was a winner-takes-all kind of game. They had to go for it. But away from home, Javier Aguirre has been a bit more conservative, and that was what we saw at the Sanchez Pizjuán again. And it worked for them. I mean, they did get the result. They got the point that they were after. And yeah, maybe it doesn't lift them out of the bottom three just yet, but it does keep them close enough to Cadiz, who obviously dropped points themselves. So it keeps that fight alive. And if they can get another good result like that in midweek, the weekend, then it'll go down to the final day and still fighting and hoping for a shot.
Yep, 2 points off the drop for the island side. They host Raya at the weekend before a final day trip to El Sadar. So, yeah, two teams with pretty much nothing to play for, so that could go either way, really. Every chance that Mallorca can still give this a good fight. As for Cadiz, you just mentioned them there. They had a great win at the weekend, winning 3-0, but this time they actually lost by the same scoreline at Real Sociedad. Two penalties in this one. Cadiz are the team with the most penalties conceded in the league this season. Obviously, they have been paying the penalty, haven't they?
Yeah, I know. It's just kind of the defensive lapses and so on. But I think Cadiz can be fairly optimistic. I mean, it's just these results. I mean, they've had a couple of results like that where they've had a really impressive result and then struggled to build any consistency or build any form out of it. And against Real Sociedad, I mean, obviously both teams with a lot to play for in that one, but I think that's the challenge that Cadiz have faced, and their fixtures are kind of these difficult ones. I mean, like you said, I mean, they could have a real big game against Alaves kind of late on, and I think that's where it's going to be interesting, is kind of how do they fare in these games. I think against Elche, they showed that with the intensity against a team that doesn't have anything to play for, they can pick up the results. So I think by the end of the season, they should be okay, but I wouldn't be placing any bets on them, that's for sure.
Yeah, do you know what? I do remember saying this a few weeks back. I think I still thought Cadiz would go. Do you know what? I'm going to stick to that because they've got Real Madrid next. And yes, the fans will be up for that one, hosting the champions, giving it everything. Real Madrid will probably rotate a bit more than they did this week. But yeah, if they lose against Real Madrid at home, then they face that do-or-die match against Alaves, with Mallorca potentially, you know, determining their own destiny. That could be a real kind of nip and tuck final day, which of course neutrals would love to see. But yeah, I think Cadiz, as you say, they seem like they're just on the edge of being safe, or just on the edge of trouble. But they could be the one that unfortunately kind of do the reverse on the final day. Of course, equally, they could get a result against Real Madrid. They've done so in the past. Clean sheet at the Bernabeu earlier this season. So who knows? It's that type of time of the season, isn't it? Anything can happen. It makes fools out of all of us for trying to do things.
Yeah, I don't think they've lost to Real Madrid since 2006. Is that the stat? So, yeah.
Yes, they were unbeaten last season too, weren't they? Yeah. Winning at Alfredo Di Stefano as well, in that counter-attacking display. Anyway, we digress. So yeah, Cadiz currently just above the drop zone, but ahead of them, 4 points clear of danger, is Granada, and they got another win under Aitor Caranca. 4 games unbeaten now under his stewardship. And Sam, you caught up with Heath Chesters to see how on earth he's been able to turn this around.
Atención, que tenemos gol. Get out. Granada, Fran.
Gol del Granada, gol de Collado, gol. ¡Que puede valer una salvación! Se equivoca el Atleti sacando desde atrás. La recupera el equipo de Granada.
I'm now joined by Heath Chesters, who is our resident Granada fan. You won't find anyone who knows more about Granada than Heath. Thanks for joining us, Heath.
No problem.
How are you doing then? I mean, you must be feeling, we were just discussing that you're feeling a bit more optimistic than you were last time we spoke a few weeks ago.
Yeah, a lot more optimistic now that the Karanka effect starting to take hold. I think what we've seen since his arrival, starting with the Atleti match over the last four games, is something more reminiscent of how the team played under Diego Martinez, with that sort of grit and determination that Granada had become known for. And obviously, in the thick of a relegation battle, restoring that confidence amongst the players, getting that grit and determination back, it's been absolutely vital.
Yeah, I mean, it's four unbeaten now under Karanka, and kind of very different results. I mean, the 0-0 draw against Granada, the 1-0 draw against Celta, the 1-0 win against Athletic Club in midweek, but I mean, the 6-2 win over Mallorca was something completely different, right?
It was spectacular. I think there was a bit of destiny there as well, because they've been pushing heavily the 300 Granadanistas that were travelling there, so it was almost like the 300 Spartans at Samway. But it actually led from a bit of protest from Granada fans, because there's been a bit of peak entry between the Granada fans and the board, and the board actually relented. I think they were a bit afraid of something akin to Valencia happening, with mass protest by Granada fans, because obviously they haven't been happy with how the Chinese owners and their delegates have run things this season. So they backed down, and it seems to be in an instant now they've realised that the fans are perhaps the most important element at the club, thankfully. So it's sort of like an about face, and on board with the fans, and that's hopefully the way it should be going forward. But that makes a difference to the players on the pitch as well, always.
Yeah, and you could tell against Athletic. I mean, the game on Tuesday night, it was one of those real kind of heart in your mouth until the final whistle, especially in injury time. Athletic had a few chances, a penalty shout. I mean, what did you make of that performance from Granada on Tuesday?
Well, I think games in recent years against Athletic Club have always been a bit blood and thunder between Granada, against Granada. It reminded me some ways of the Cup semi-final just before the pandemic. It was the last game before all the lockdowns, which Granada lost on that occasion. So the guy, Yuri, who scored the winner in that game, was on the receiving end of some spikes from the Granada fans. But, I mean, it was a phenomenal game, end-to-end. The notable difference that you could see all the way through the game was Karanka from the touchline encouraging the defenders to press higher up the pitch, and for the attacking players, midfielder players, to start pressing the Athletic players around their own box. So that kept the rival team under pressure a lot more than we've seen under either Robert Moreno or Ruben Torrecilla. So that's been a big difference over the last few weeks.
Yeah, and Alex Callado, I mean, the goal eventually came from that, wasn't the high press from Alex Callado. I mean, I've been quite impressed by him since he joined from Barcelona on loan. What have you made of his performances?
Well, I think that since Karanka arrived, again, the Karanka effect, we have to say, he's playing him in the right position. He's playing him as an attacking midfielder. Now, although Callado's not your sort of typical pressing player, he's a typical number 10 that sort of floats around. But obviously he's been encouraged by Karanka to get involved in the pressing as well, and it's paying dividends. It's good to see. You can see he's busting a gut, the lad. So as well as his technical ability and his ability to get past players, provide assists and obviously score goals as well, it's made a big difference that he's playing in the right role. And there's a bit more to that which I can explain. With Karanka, it was interesting. There was an interview with Jorge Molina in Cope the other night, and they were asking him what are the biggest differences. And obviously, the first thing he had to do was reinstall the confidence back in the players and the self-esteem, build that up again. That was a big priority, and that was what he focused on mostly ahead of the match against Atleti that you were at the Wanda. But since then, obviously, he's been working technically and tactically with the players. And one of the things that Molina highlighted was that, as, along with the group chat, basically sat down individually with every player in the squad with video presentations, highlighting all the strengths and weaknesses. So he's obviously spent a lot of time analysing each player individually to look at what they can contribute to the collective. And obviously that makes a big difference, because I think players like that. Players like to be coached. Players want to know where they're going wrong, what they can do better, how they can improve. And obviously, like I say, it benefits the collective in the long run. So that is quite an interesting insight from Molina as to what Karanka has done since his arrival.
Yeah, I think I saw a quote from him in the post-match press conference saying that he could tell the difference in the squad, that when he arrived, it was all heavy breathing and panting in the dressing room, and now there's music and jokes and so on. I think that has a big impact too. I mean, two games left now, as things stand, 4 points clear of the relegation zone. It's Betis and Espanyol, the two games that are left. I mean, are Granada going to stay up?
I never like to sort of create the gaffe, you could call that the Tomas Roncero effect from Arsenal Chiringuito, because he's actually from Granada originally, and every now and again when Granada are doing well, he pipes up and all the Granada fans say, please shut up, don't say anything, because you're bad luck. Yeah, you're like the black cat. I think it's in their own hands. I think a point, maybe 2 points at most, would be enough. Obviously, it depends on the results elsewhere for Levante, maybe for Alaves now as well, after their win, and certainly for Mallorca, they've got it all to do. Granada are a little bit more comfortable, but I think they'll go out and bust a gut against Betis. Whether they'll get a point or not, or 3 points or not, is a different matter, because obviously Betis are still fighting for their possibility of Champions League football, even though it's looking quite slim. But I think all being said, the game against Espanyol are probably more important, because Espanyol will be coming to Granada on the final day of the season with absolutely zero in play. And you know what it's like sometimes with teams when they've got absolutely nothing in play. Some of the players are thinking of the summer holidays. They don't want to be on crutches during the jollies with an injury. And they're not playing at full gas. So I think that's what people are hoping for from that last match of the season. The game at Betis is going to be a great atmosphere, certainly because there's a minimum of 3,000 Granadanistas travelling there after snapping up so many of the tickets. If there's more, they reckon there could be possibly up to 5,000. So you'll certainly hear plenty of their voice during the game. And if they can get something, fantastic. If not, it's not the end of the world, because there's still that one game left against Espanyol at home, with the restored confidence that they've lost Carmenes now.
Yeah, and if the other teams drop points, then it could all be done after this weekend as well. So
yeah,
let's keep an eye on that in the relegation dogfight. No, thanks for joining us, Heath.
No problem. Good speaking to you.
And now let's hand back over to Matt to analyse the rest of the action.
Thank you very much, as always, to Heath there for that fantastic insight into Granada. I'm very much optimistic for the next couple of games. Elsewhere in that bottom half, kind of middle zone, Getafe still not quite safe yet, but very close now after they got a 1-1 draw at El Sadar. It was great to see Oyer scoring at El Sadar in the game where he was given that send-off by the home fans, the club captain who will be leaving at the end of the season after 15 years service for the club. So a nice even game there. Getafe almost over the line, but not quite. And just a quick line on Espanyol. We mentioned their loss at Alaves. Rumours very strongly circulating in the last few hours that Vicente Moreno could be sacked by the club. What's your latest information on that, Sam?
Yeah, well, it seems that there's some real kind of unhappiness in the camp. The players aren't happy with him at all. There's been a few kind of confrontations. I think we saw the most visible one yet, kind of with that clash with Raul de Tomas, kind of squaring up to each other almost in the game. And that's obviously not something that anybody ever wants to see. And I think the players have reportedly been asking for Vicente Moreno's head for a while now. I mean, their away form all season has been pretty terrible. and there's going to be some more wider organisational changes. It seems like Rufete, the director of football, will also be moving on, and Diego Martinez is one of the names to be linked, the former Granada manager, so I'm sure Heath would not be so happy seeing him in the opposition dugout, but happy to see him back in Spanish football at the very least, so it could be an interesting one to keep an eye on.
Absolutely, I'm sure plenty of people would be happy to see Diego Martinez back in La Liga. Certainly speaking for myself, that would be the case. Right then, let's wrap part one up there. Join us after the break where we'll talk about the European race, which is still pretty hot. Join us for that and chat on Barca and Atleti too. Join us after the break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown. It's our Matchday 36 recap podcast. Two games to go, plenty to be decided, but some things have been, as we said. Atletico qualifying for the Champions League is one of them. 10th season in a row they've achieved this. Every one of Diego Simeone's full seasons they've finished inside the Spanish top four. A great achievement for them in what's been a pretty rough season. But to get all the information on their win over Elche, let's hear from Jeremy Berin from Into the Calderon.
Carrasco, retrasa para De Paul, De Paul, Griezmann, De Paul, golazo.
Qué maravilla, por favor. Gol
del Atlético de Madrid. Gol de Rodrigo De Paul. Qué jugadón, qué combinación tan bonita con Griezmann, que pudo chutar y finalizar él, pero que asistió para que Rodrigo De Paul.
And I am now joined by Jeremy Berin of Into the Calderon. Jeremy, what did you make of the game? What did you make of European qualification, the Champions League for Atletico Madrid? I mean, you're a happy man today?
Yes, I am a happy man. I hoped to be a happier man this season with the league title win last year, with the expectations, the anticipation of what was to come this year. Didn't come off. Atletico had a really messy, difficult, rough season, but in the end, what matters most is qualifying for the Champions League, finishing somewhere inside La Liga's top four. And Atleti do have options to finish as high as third. With a victory over Sevilla on Sunday, the Rojiblancos can guarantee that. The game against Elche was a really positive display for Atleti, one of their better displays from the second half of this season. Nervy opening 20 minutes. It looked like Atleti were feeling the anxiety, feeling a bit of pressure. But once that first goal came, everything calmed down. They were able to relax and end up with a pretty comfortable, if not convincing, 2-0 win to make it official, wrap up Champions League qualification for the 10th year running. Good stuff.
Yeah, and a couple of big performances from players who haven't been so good this season. I mean, Rodrigo de Paul and Matheus Cunha both got on the score sheet. Haven't found the net perhaps as often as we might have expected early on in the campaign. And then Antoine Griezmann was involved in both goals. I mean, were there kind of reasons to be optimistic for Atleti fans?
Yeah, I think that's the glass half full look is the look I prefer to adopt in most instances. And with Griezmann, I think Atleti and Atleti supporters don't really have much choice but to try to be optimistic. I wrote about Griezmann last week on the Calderon, a big old column about how Atleti should probably look to return him to Barcelona this summer, given how difficult his year individually has been on the pitch. But a very positive display for him on Wednesday, kind of in a deeper lying role, more of a wide playmaking role. He was able to pick his moments really well and had a hand in setting up both goals. The latter was for DePaul, a primary assist for DePaul, who has, another player with a really rough season under his belt. He's been playing at a position, a role that isn't really familiar for him and hasn't allowed him to show his best version, as the saying is in Spanish, right? He hasn't been able to show his qualities, the reasons why Atletico paid 35 million euros for him from Udinese last summer. But he chipped in with a goal after the hour that pretty much wrapped things up. And between Griezmann, DePaul, Cunha, especially those latter two, they can definitely take a step forward next year. Cunha potentially as the team's starting number nine. I think there's a very plausible scenario where Cunha is leading the line for Atleti next season, assuming they cannot splash the cash on a Lautaro Martinez or Darwin Nunez.
Yeah, and at the other end, I mean, I thought one of the guys who was really impressive was Reinildo. I mean, we talk about these big signings, Rodrigo de Paul and the 35, 40 million euros, Darwin Nunez, Lautaro Martinez, but Reinildo cost, what was it, 3, 4 million euros? And for me, he's been one of Atleti's best players this season.
What a signing. Yeah, wonderful business from Atleti. As much as we criticize or critique Atleti's transfer policy, and there have been some strange signings this season in previous years with Andrea Berta leaving the front office, Matheus Cunha and Reinildo Mandava have been wonderful signings, and both for clinched for under 30 million. Cunha was signed for 25, 30 mil, and Reinildo came in at the very end of the window on an expiring contract. Atleti purchased him for not even 4 million euros, and he's already repaid that transfer fee and then some on top of it. He has transformed Atleti's entire defense with his physicality, his strength, his athleticism, his intelligence, his positioning is top-notch, and it's allowed Diego Simeone to rotate a bit more freely between a 3-5-2 and a 4-4-2. Almost immediately, Reinildo came in and was converted to a left-sided center back. He has taken on that role with gusto and bravado. He's been an excellent signing. And without him, I don't think we're talking about Atleti clinching a top four place with two games to go. I think it's a much worse situation if Reinildo's signing is not clinched on the final day of the January window.
Exactly. And I'm going to pose you a question, Jeremy. I saw that you asked it over on the Patreon for your podcast, Colchonero Chat. What grade would you give Atletico for their season this season? I mean, it's been mixed. I mean, the end result doesn't seem too bad, but maybe disappointing after last season, as you said earlier on.
Yeah, it's a tough one because I think there have been some positive developments this season, but the negatives and what was hoped for, what was anticipated, I think outweigh some of these positives. I'd say probably a C minus or a D plus. Atleti won the league last year, Sam. They won it in playing a more progressive, bolder, dynamic style, and we saw a regression. We saw a regression back and a reversion back to a more confused, more rigid attacking style as Diego Simeone tried to evolve the team, couldn't, and there were several months where it was just very confusing and frustrating to watch Atleti play. There was no clear game plan. A bunch of guys weren't playing to the level that they displayed last season. A lot of chopping and changing, suspensions, injuries, guys falling out of favor, falling out of the team. And then you have the Kieran Trippier sale in January that really disrupts things when Atleti could have started the calendar year with a bang. Trippier goes out and they don't properly replace him. That's a black mark on the season. So I would say C minus if I'm feeling generous, probably closer to a D plus. But that's not to say there weren't positives. As I mentioned, Cunha's development has been huge. Reynildo's signing was transformational, really. They had a good season in the Champions League, a really good season in Europe, getting out of a really, really tough group and then pushing Manchester City to the limit in the quarterfinal of the Champions League. And in the end, the main objective is to get top four, somewhere top three, based on Atleti's financial situation, based on the budget, based on what they can offer players in terms of salary and other perks. Third is where Atleti should be most years. Disappointing that it comes after a season where Atleti won the league for the second time under Diego Simeone. But that is the economic, the financial realities that most years you expect Atleti to finish third. So I know that's a long-winded answer to the question, but yeah, a rough year. Hopefully next year from the Atleti POV is better. Hopefully they can knock out some of these signings they need to knock out in the summer and truly challenge for the title again next year.
Yeah, I know that at the start of the season, I think everyone in the La Liga lowdown squad predicted that Atleti would be champions again, and it's not quite been that. So, Jeremy, one last question. One piece of advice, or one wish, perhaps. Let's give it one wish. One wish, genie in the bottle. One wish for Atletico Madrid next season. What is it?
I'm begging this team to sign a number five. Please sign a pivot to compete with Jeffrey Kondogbia and offer more balance to our midfield. I think if Atleti add a number five and a starting quality right back, those are two essential fundamental signings Diego Simeone needs. If Atleti make them, they will be a much better team next year, irrespective of the other business they do in the window. I know a lot of people have said they should sign at least one, if not two, central defenders. I agree with them, but a right back and a number five are absolutely critical to this team's success next year. It will determine 100% determine if they can really compete for trophies or not. If they make those two signings, then they're going to be a lot better next year. You're going to see a more balanced, a more fluid team, and an Atleti team that makes more sense than what we saw for the majority of this season.
Great. I'm looking forward to speaking to you in August, September, Jeremy, when Daniel Vaz is playing as the number five, and we can catch up on just what went wrong.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us, Jeremy.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. Fantastic, as always, to hear from him. And do check out Into the Calderon for all your Atleti coverage. Well, of course, that result meant that three of the Champions League spots are now sewn up. Of course, Real Madrid, Barcelona and Atletico Madrid, leaving just one spot available, and it will be decided by a team in Seville. It's Sevilla or Real Betis. As we mentioned, Mallorca got the draw at the Sanchez Pizjuan, which means that Betis had the chance to close the gap on Sevilla, which they did by beating Valencia 3-0 at Mestalla. A late couple of goals there sealing that win. It means there's only 5 points between them. There are only two games left, so you would still have the odds very much in Sevilla's favour. But given Sevilla's fixtures, away to Atletico Madrid and then at home to Athletic Club, nothing is guaranteed, especially with the way Sevilla are playing, right, Sam?
Yeah, no, I mean, Sevilla have been out of form for a while now, but I think I saw somebody had run a simulation about now of 100 times Betis made the top four once. But I think Betis will be quite happy with that. I mean, step by step, slow progress and Europa League. And I mean, who would have guessed that they would be pushing Sevilla quite so closely this season? Probably not many of us. But for Sevilla, it'll be disappointing when we've seen their frustration with Lopetegui getting sent off. And again, I mean, it's not the first time we've seen that. And I think the fans are beginning to get a little bit fed up of the style, of the lack of offensive flair and so on at Sevilla. And I think we'll probably see Lopetegui stay at Sevilla this summer, but if they don't get off to a good start next season, then maybe there could be some pressure on him.
Well, it's interesting. Rory and I were talking in the last pod. It was had to be cut, but we did release it on the socials. We were discussing this very fact about Lopetegui potentially parting ways. As you mentioned, with Espanyol heavily linked with Diego Martinez, that's a potential candidate gone. So that would potentially strengthen the chances of Lopetegui staying. You think he will remain at the Sanchez Pizjuan for next season?
Yeah, I think Sevilla have been building around Lopetegui for quite a while now, and Diego Martinez, I think Sevilla would see him as a coach below their level. I think they want to establish themselves now as kind of one of these elite European clubs, and Diego Martinez, as much as we love him, as much as anybody like follows Spanish football appreciates and values him, I'm not sure he's an elite European coach yet. So I mean, I think
I think Lopetegui's safe for now, and I think Monchi is kind of really bought into his project, and everything that was coming out of the club is so positive about Lopetegui that this is just a blip, a bad run and so on, that I think he can sleep easy, even if he is feeling the heat from the fans.
Yeah, it is very hot down in Seville, to be fair. Yeah, as you say, if they do get over the line, that'll be 3 years in a row they've finished inside the top four. And before Lopetegui's arrival, they only finished in the top four once in 9 seasons. So that kind of gives you the context, really, of where they were and where they are now. And it's really a credit to Lopetegui that you know, being fourth is seen as frustrating, given how well he has done in the past. So, as you say, his own standards kind of set him up for a fall in many ways. Barcelona, we have to mention those, of course. They're still trying to secure second spot and Super Cup qualification. Let's not forget that glorious competition. They beat Celta 3-1 at Camp Nou. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang scoring a brace. Iago Aspas replying for Celta, as he always seems to do against Barca. Pretty chaotic game. Ronald Araujo had to be sent away in an ambulance after a concussion. We send our best wishes to him. Thankfully, he was out of hospital the following day, but it looked a pretty serious one. It leaves their defence pretty light there, doesn't it, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, Getafe up next, though. I'd probably be glad that it's Getafe and not somebody a bit more threatening in attack. But, I mean, Xavi's done a good job there, and it does look like they get second place now, and that's all you can really ask for, a kind of a routine win over Celta to all but guarantee that with two games to go. I mean, I think any Barcelona fan would have taken that if we'd spoken to them in October, November time. So yeah, a good result.
Definitely. I just can't believe the disrespect you're showing to your favourite man and Isenal. Not threatening, Getafe. What?
Well, he's gone off the boil a little bit, but yeah, he's just saving himself for next season.
Oh, of course. Ever since you put him in your team of the season, he's just fallen off a cliff.
Yeah, well, since you vetoed him, he's just on strike now.
Well, you tried to veto Benzema and he's still going, so not sure how much power we have, Samuel. Anyway, let's move on. The race for Europa League, of course, is probably the hottest thing left, apart from relegation, in La Liga. Betis, of course, guaranteed a position in the Europa League by virtue of being Copa champions. And, of course, they are still fighting for fourth place, however slim that possibility is. Real Sociedad, they had that confident 3-0 win over Cadiz. That now means that they have guaranteed European football for the third season in a row, because they can't finish any lower than seventh, which would be a Europa Conference place. And it also guarantees they finish higher than their rivals, Athletic Club. 8% of their La Liga goals this season came in this one match, Sam. What happened? Was it just the penalties, or was it as convincing as the scoreline made it look?
No, it's the first time this season they've scored 3 goals at home. So I think that says it all. And I mean, it was the 98th minute penalty that made it 3 goals. But David Silva happened, Cadiz defence happened. I mean, quite a lot happened in this game. But everything seemed to click a little bit more for Real Sociedad. And I think that's something that they've been waiting for quite some time now. I mean, Soloth got the early goal, and I think that was a real confidence boost for them to kind of set them on their way. I think that's the issue with Real Sociedad. I think there's only one goal scored in the first half of a game of one of their last 10 home games or something like that. So to get that early goal is a big boost and really help them on their way.
Yeah, absolutely. They a much needed 3 points for them as they try to cement that sixth spot. But Villarreal are right on their tails. They had a thumping 5-1 win at Rayo Vallecano. The Rayo fans celebrated their permanence, their survival before the game. But they weren't celebrating too much at full time, were they, with this result?
No, but I mean, Villarreal were a team that I've got it all to play for, and Rayo Vallecano clearly weren't. So I think the quality between the two squads as well just told the difference at the end of the day. Some fantastic finishing, some unexpected goal scorers in the two fullbacks, Juan Foyth and Alfonso Pedraza. So, I mean, just what Unai Emery would have wanted with his top three goal scorers, the attackers in Gerard Moreno, Jeremy Pino, and now Danjuma being out. So getting those goals from elsewhere is going to be very important.
Yeah, so many from set pieces too. His chalkboard's obviously been working overtime in training in the run-up to this one. This sets up a tantalising fixture at the weekend, because we have Villarreal hosting Real Sociedad, which could be absolutely massive. If Villarreal win, they will go sixth on head-to-head. And then, of course, we'll only need to match Real Sociedad's result on the final day to reach the Europa League. Real Sociedad, of course, will be looking to avoid defeat to stay 3 points clear. How do you see that potential clash going?
I have no idea, to be honest with you. I really don't know how to call it. I think it's going to be a fascinating game tactically, everything. I think it's going to be a brilliant game to watch. And I couldn't tell you if it's going to be a 4-3 win for somebody, a 4-0 win for somebody, or a 0-0 draw. It's a really difficult one to call. I think that Villarreal will be very glad that it's there. And obviously they got that away win, which is something that hasn't happened too often for teams visiting the Real Arena this season. So I think I make Villarreal a slight favourites going into this one, but it's going to be a fascinating game.
Yeah, I think I would have to agree with you there. And yeah, as we said, Athletic, the last team kind of with options for Europe, but they lost at Granada, as we heard from Heath. So they are now 4 points off seventh and looking pretty unlikely to reach that, that European place. But you never know. While it's possible in the Hattical, it could happen. They have Osasuna left before a final day trip to the Sanchez Pizjuan. So that could still be an important game for both sides potentially on that final day. But we'll have to wait and see what the weekend throws up before that. Right then, that's the recap of all the games. Plenty of goals. It's time now for our MVP section, Samuel. Would you like to kick us off, please, with your first nominee?
Yeah, my first nominee is a little bit under the radar, maybe a bit out there, but it's going to be Gonzalo Escalante. I think he's really changed Alaves' midfield since he came in, and there was a great headline in Marca which kind of summed up his performance against Espanyol, which was Escalante and 10 others. I think that was kind of the perfect way to describe it. He was everywhere. He scored one of the goals. He was creating everything. I think he had 4 shots. He was breaking all the play up every time Espanyol tried to move forward. So, I mean, the complete midfield engine performance from him. And if Alaves do achieve the impossible, he will be a big reason why, since he's come in January. And one of the best things that Mendilibar did while he was at Alaves.
Yeah, strange, isn't it, to think that he was a Mendilibar man from the time at Eibar. And he's been the main goal scorer, really, since Christmas. Hosolu going off the boil slightly. It's Escalante who's been coming up trumps. So, yeah, very worthy choice there. I'm going to have to go with a man that's a bit more of a star name, just a little bit. Vinny Jr. An absolutely stellar performance against Levante. They must have been dreading it when they saw the team sheet and saw Luka Modric starting, Benzema playing, Vinny playing. I mean, Modric had 3 assists in the first half. Benzema was his superior best again, but I'm going to go with Vinny because he scored his first career hat-trick and got an assist as well, so it means he's now in double figures for goals and assists in La Liga alone, 17 and 10, and I don't think anyone could have foreseen those numbers coming at the start of the season. He was very much on the periphery. He was even questionable whether he was going to be starting matches, but this season it's really been all about Benzema, as they say, Vinny and Benzema running the show up front for Real Madrid. And of course, they still have plenty to play for this season with the Champions League final ahead. And with Vinny in this kind of form, it's certainly a big key factor in that final. So yeah, Vinny's definitely one of my nominees. Who is your second one, please, Sam?
Well, I guess mine's kind of the polar opposite of Vinny in some senses, of the young prodigy to David Silva, who's the old wizard of La Liga, I guess we could say. And I mean, he just makes it look so easy, and I think he's really building up some momentum now at Real Sociedad at the worst kind of time, I guess, being the end of the season, but they need that kind of talent, that decisive kind of passing that he has, and he's just got so much technical technique and quality that just sets him apart from any other player. I mean, Real Sociedad have some great midfielders, but David Silva just stands out for that ability to play a defence splitting pass, and that's exactly what he did against Cadiz, and I think we can be very glad that he's got an extended deal in San Sebastian and that we'll be seeing more of him at Real Sociedad next season.
Absolutely. Well said. Well said. I'm going to go for a Villarreal player, and we could see them, of course, facing off against Real Sociedad at the weekend. I'm going to go with Alfonso Pedraza, who's not always started for Unai Emery. He's kind of been a rotation player quite a lot of the season, but in this game at Vallecas, he was sensational. Put them ahead early with that header from a Dani Parejo cross. Just sets them off to the best possible start, really. And then he got the assist for Paco Alcácer's goal, who had gone over a year without scoring. So he'll be very thankful for Pedraza for that particular assist. And then he rounded it off too with the 5th and final goal of the game. Yeah, 2 goals and 1 assist from fullback. You can't really ask for much more than that, can you? So a real solid pro. Loves the club. You know, gives his teammates support all the time, whether he plays or not. He's just a real good, honest guy, someone that, you know, teams really value in the dressing room, and And he's a decent player too. You know, everyone talks about the kind of more elaborate fullbacks they have, the likes of Estupiñán and Juan Foyt being so reliable. But yeah, Pedraza, he's very much a brilliant option to have as a kind of rotation for Unai Emery's side. And he could have a role to play in the next couple of matches as we go to the close too. So on that note, we must go soon to the close. But without wanting to miss moments of the week, I'll come to you in just a second, Sam. But for me, I can't get over José Luis Morales, El Comandante, at the end of that game, in tears in the interview. But it was a lovely gesture from Vinicius Jr. to come over and kind of console him. Two players at the very opposite ends of the age scale in terms of football. Vinny with it all ahead of him, Morales with many years in the legs, but both fantastic footballers and, you know, game respects game, as the kids say. Yeah, it was just a very emotional moment on many fronts, really. But how about you? Have you got a more upbeat moment for us?
Yeah, I think that was one of my moments of the weekend as well. So I think the other one would be Granada and the final few minutes, the injury time of that game against Athletic. I mean, it was end-to-end stuff. I mean, corner for Athletic, they got Unai Simón up. Granada break, they score, it's offside. Then Athletic come right back at them again, hit the post, I think. They hit the post, so it's like 96 minutes, 38 seconds after 6 minutes of injury time. So really kind of incredible end-to-end scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. Pure chaos. It's why we love La Liga and it's why we all love football. It's been a mad week. We've had a match day on top of a match day. Hope you're keeping up, listener, because we're doing our best to. We've got more to come at the weekend, of course, with two matches on Saturday and then eight kicking off at the same time, with all those things still to be decided. Final space for the Champions League, Europa League, Conference League, and, of course, the final two relegation spots. Still so much to play for. Please stick with us at La Liga Lowdown. Follow us on Twitter and check out our website, laligalowdown.com. We've got a piece on Iker Muniain is our latest offering from Louis Scattergood, so do check that one out. But from all of us here, thank you to Sam, thank you to Jeremy, thank you to Heath, and of course, thank you to you all at home for listening. We hope you've enjoyed it, and we hope you'll tune in again for the final few of the season. That's all we've got time for. Thanks for listening. Adios.
Levante. En las barras azulgranas de tu clásico jersey, levante la afición más fiel y sana, con ardor puso su fe. Levante tu coraje y nuevos brillos de entusiasmo hacen vibrar. Levante, tus colores son los míos, tus colores. Son los míos, tu nombre, mi ideal.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.